From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone, to Mind Health Matters with the Dr. Bernie Siegel, who has been, he's actually retired now, but a pediatric surgeon and many other things, books that people have read generations ago, and still it makes a difference in their lives. So Bernie has a great guest for you today. His name is Jerry Hussey, and he hails from Ireland, and he is the author of Awaken Your Power Within, Let Go of Fear, Discover Your Infinite Potential, Become Your True Self. You are an infinite being with infinite potential. All you need to do is open yourself up to a new consciousness, a true vision of who you really are, and awaken to the power within. Jerry is a performance psychologist, and in recent years, he's been coined the soul coach. He has been in human health and performance field for 20 years, and he has led teams for success at Olympic Games, Heineken Cups, World Cups, and World and European Championships. And we'll learn more about him. We'll be talking about his book. And now over to you, Dr. Bernie.
Okay. I was going to take the morning off, but if you want me to work, all right.
This is work?
No, it's not, because I can't remember. Oh, I know, it was Ashley Montague, the philosopher, and he's written a lot on love and healing, and I remember giving a talk at some conference one day, and after we were done, he came up to me, he said, "I loved what you said," and boy, was I flattered, you know, somebody with his reputation. But then he said, "But you have to understand, it's because I agree with you." And I never have forgotten that, because I agree with you. I think what you're doing is lovely. And I can say the same thing about Jerry and his book and what he's been doing, Awaken Your Power Within. Because I was thinking when I was looking at this, getting ready, you know, for us to all talk, subtitle, Let Go of Fear, Discover Your Infinite Potential, Become Your True Self. What changed my life, and I mean that literally. I mean, I changed my life, but what directed me to change it was a patient of mine who sat next to me at a conference. I thought it was for doctors, and I was the only doctor in the room, believe it or not, because all the cancer patients came to learn how to help themselves. And the way doctors are trained, they don't learn how to help anybody. They treat diseases. But anyway, here's a quote from her that re-led me to alter my life. I said, "Why are you here?" She said, "You're a nice guy. I feel better when I'm in the office with you, but I can't take you home with me. So I need to know how to live between office visits." When I heard her say that, I said, wow, I don't have to be a failure. If I can't cure a disease, I can help people live. And I think that's the same, awaken your power within, you know, discover your infinite potential, become your true self, what Jerry's saying. That when you start to do those things for people, all kinds of amazingly wonderful things begin to happen in their body. And that's the part that where I was always called the controversial Dr. Siegel, but another subtitle in his book, Anorexia of the Soul. And when I helped people to find their true self in their new life, it was amazing what happened to them physically. You know, their body got the message. They like living. And one more story. then I better stop because we invited a guest to be here for an hour. But one more in terms of awakening your power within. This was a woman who had polio as a child and had, you know, muscle loss and deformities. And she said, I grew up never liking my body. And then she developed a neurological disease and it's deteriorating further. And she said to me, what I'm going to do is lie down in front of a mirror naked and start loving my body because I don't want to die not liking and loving my body. She said, I'm doing it an inch at a time. I start on my toes and I work my way up. To make a long story short, within a couple of months, her disease had gone into complete remission and she was well again. And I always say, that's no coincidence. So, Jerry, what got you to write a book called Awaken Your Power Within? What made you want to write it and offer it to people?
Thank you. And firstly, thank you, Deborah. And it's a great honor to be chatting with you, Dr. Siegel, because little do you know, you've been so instrumental in my own life and you've been a driving force that has enabled me to withstand some of the criticisms at times and to stay steadfast in to try understanding the human being at a deeper level beyond the physical. So firstly, it's a real honor just to chat with you. The answer to the question is a couple of fold. My journey started with firstly trying to understand myself. I talk about in the book that the first time I thought about suicide, I was 11 years old. And between the ages of 11 and 14, I was crippled with anxiety. I had a bad stammer. I couldn't speak. And I just couldn't make it go away. My parents brought me to every doctor they could find. And they tested my body, my lungs, my heart, my brain, and of course, everything was healthy. Eventually, I was told by a pediatrician, or my mum was told by a pediatrician that, in his opinion, I was making it all up so that I wouldn't have to go to school. So very early in my life, I had to make a decision. Either I just threw in the towel and not live with this, or in some way try to figure out what is it and could it be healed. So from the age of 15, you know, I started studying, reading, trying to understand the brain, the central nervous system, the difference between the brain and the mind, and the difference then with the soul. So, you know, I got thrown out of geography class on one particular day because I was reading a book on how the brain works. I was 16 years old in a geography class, and I got thrown out for reading nonsense. Yeah, so I got into this work really as a child that had no other option but to try to figure something out for himself and try to figure out what is this anxiety, where is it coming from? Because in Ireland, particularly at the time, medicine focused on the physical, but there was nothing physically wrong with me, but I didn't feel healthy. I felt everything but healthy. Then once I started to figure out stuff around the brain and neuroscience, and I started understanding the gut brain axis, the vagus nerve, and how all of these things are connected and how our thoughts and emotions can actually change our biology and chemistry. And even when I go further, I remember being at a Bruce Lipton conference and listening to him explain how our thoughts, our emotions, the things we think about can actually change or you know, epigenetics. It can actually impact our genes and our cells. And when I came back to Ireland, I was trying to tell people that, and it was like I was speaking a foreign language. But I was lucky enough to start working with some people, and I started working with sports teams, and eventually we started turning out Olympic champions, world champions, and eventually I was working with so many successful sport people that eventually other people wanted to find out what's happening here. So eventually, I remember watching a video you said, and you said, why did I write a book? And you said, because I wouldn't have to go around talking all the time. and for me, it was a little bit like that. I believe that one of my missions is to be of service to the world. I think time is a precious commodity. And I thought that a book might be a better way to share my message and to share the lessons and learnings that I had acquired since I was 11 years old. And I just thought this is the way to do it. And it's just, it was, I believe it was a simple book. I wrote it in 3 weeks, but it was 20 years in my mind. It's my whole life. It's every piece of research I've done. It's all my academic studies. And most importantly, it's the deepest questioning of who I am. What is this universe about? Why am I here? And I just put it all into a book.
Perfect.
One of the big questions, you have the term letting go over and over again, you know, as chapters. And I wanted to ask you something. Were you loved by your parents?
I was absolutely loved by my parents, but what I make clear in the book is, and it's you know, it's very insightful to ask me that, what I made clear in the book is the narrative, the story that I had built in my head was that my dad didn't love me, that I wasn't good enough, because I had two other brothers who were like my dad. They could build cars, they could build engines, and they had this incredible connection with my dad, but I was more artistic. I was more interested in this, in the stars, the universe. And I kind of felt that there was something wrong with me. So I've only come to learn that I was absolutely loved, but my dad couldn't and didn't, he wasn't able to express his love in the way that I needed to hear it. So for much of my life, I believed that was a failure. I believed that my dad was almost embarrassed about me. And in the book, I go as far as to say that I believe one of the greatest traumas a human being can experience is the feeling of being unloved or unlovable.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I wanted to bring that up because a study was done of Harvard students maybe 30 years ago, 20 or 30, but a study was done. The students were asked, did your parents love you while they were at college? If they said no, by middle age, 98% had suffered a major illness.
Of course.
If they said yes, 24% had. And I grew up with very loving parents. It drove me nuts. That may sound funny. But, you know, when you come home and you say, oh, I had a horrible day at school, everything went wrong, my mother would answer from the kitchen, God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. And it was like, Ma, did you hear what I said? You know? So I'd sit on my bed and say, God, my mother's no help. And what was the other one? I have to make a decision. Do what makes you happy.
Yeah.
So I never got help, was the way I interpreted it. But I realized, yeah, but you had to learn what makes you happy.
Of course.
And that because of tragedies in the family when they were younger, they felt we're all here to help each other. So I grew up with those three messages. And you don't appreciate what other kids are going through. You know, you could be in kindergarten, and you don't think about, you know, when the kid is black and blue, because this is a true story, I would always say to him, what happened? Oh, I fell off my bike. I learned later his father was beating him up.
I know.
But he's not going to tell the class, so he doesn't get any help. And then, you know, I began to realize how fortunate and lucky I was. And I mean this, too, because I've written letters, but they don't get published in the newspapers. If we wanted to stop all the violence that's going on in the world today, it isn't about making it harder to buy a gun, you know, or make it you have to be 30 to get a gun. It's about loving those people as children. So the violence isn't a part of their life. They don't need a gun. They have all they need. Yeah. And I'd say what we need to do, in a sense, is train and license parents instead of putting restrictions on guns. Let's train parents. You know, look at the title of your book. If we train parents to awaken the power within their children so they didn't live in fear, fill their potential, and became the true self. Because one of the things I also saw, and don't hesitate to interrupt me, because when I start telling stories, I have an angel named George, and he does a lot of talking, and sometimes he won't stop. But that, you know, when people, oh, I have such a, you know, short time to live, and I'm going to close my law office and play my violin, which I always wanted to do, but my parents wouldn't let me. They wanted a lawyer. You know, a couple of years later, he wasn't dead, and he had a job in an orchestra. So, and this one makes everybody laugh. A fellow I knew said, I'm moving to Colorado to die in the mountains. They tell me I have a few months to live. I want to die in the mountains. It's beautiful. I said to the family, call me for the funeral, because I feel very close to him. A year goes by, no phone call. So I called the family to say, why didn't you invite me? He answered the phone. And he said, it was so beautiful here, I forgot to die. And that's why your book, you know, is that same kind of guide. Awaken your power within, not what others have imposed upon you, but your power. Become the person you want to be, and it's a very different life. Because, again, one more statistic, then I'll stop talking for a while, is Monday morning. We have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses because of how people feel. And that's why I love your term, letting go, all those chapters, letting go. When you let go, the real authentic self comes forward. Yeah,
it's so true. And I work with a lot of different corporate organizations. And, you know, sometimes I'm working with a group of people and, you know, they're all senior executives. They're all, you know, on this corporate machine. They're all working really hard. They're all chasing something. Sometimes, you know, you ask them simple questions like, you know, when you were 8 years old, what did you dream of doing? Is this it? And who stopped you? The amount of people who live a life trying to fulfill the expectations of other people. And in my book, I have a section where I say that we get to a point in life where we value social affirmation more than self-expression. What other people think of us becomes more important of me expressing my own life. And if our own dreams, if our own truth begins to seem a little bit different, then we're so terrified of not being accepted, not being valued. We're so terrified of being seen as different. We start to suppress that. And we begin to, I talk about we wear this mask. So we put a mask on so that we fit in with other people. But the mask is all the time strangling and suffocating our true self, our very soul. Our soul for me is, it's the essence of who we are. It's the spark of life that makes us different to everybody else. But in today's world, we're so fixated on fitting in that we actually begin to strangle and suffocate our own soul just so we fit in, and we start to work in jobs that we think will get us accepted by other people or will make us our parents proud. And for me, it's about letting go of this bizarre idea that we're not enough unless we fulfill all these things for other people, and letting go, because ultimately I think we're all looking for peace, and part of peace is just feeling that I'm enough.
Yeah, I don't know whose quote this was, but he who seeks to save his life will lose it. He who's willing to lose his life will save it. And again, it's what, you know, parents, we want you to be this. Well, look at Donald Trump. I mean, years ago, when he first ran for president, I wrote a letter to USA Today, and they printed it. I said, what Donald needs is love. What people need to do when he gets upset or raises his voice is just say, Donald, I love you. Because he didn't grow up with love.
Of course.
Right.
So how
do and you his father, from what I read from within the family, if it's true, I should say, is that the father pitched him against the brothers, and that's how they grew up from when they were young. So they were always antagonizing and looking to win back then. So,
and I, you know, they printed my letter that we need to say to him, I love you. Because I have found, and I mean this literally, for those of you who ever get in trouble with somebody who's violent on the streets or anywhere else, this has worked for me 100% of the time. In one of my books, it's 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, there's a message every day. This really happened up in Cape Cod here in the States. The traffic was horrendous. Car pulls up behind me, and some young man starts screaming and cursing like it's my fault. you know, all the traffic. I asked one of the police who was on the corner to talk to him, tell him to stop screaming. I couldn't believe this policeman said, that's not my job. So I got out of my car and went to talk to him with our kids yelling, he may have a gun. But I walked up to the window of his car, which was halfway down, and I said, I want you to know something. I love you. I'm sorry your parents don't. He stopped screaming, made a U-turn, and drove away in silence. Oh. And I'm sure he went home to talk to his parents. Mm-hmm. And I've done that on the streets, too. You know, said to people, I don't know what's going on in your life, but I want you to know I love you. And boy, do I get thank yous from others who are on the street with me, you know, wondering, is this a drug addict with a gun? What's going to happen? And then Siegel says, I love you, and they stop yelling. but truthfully,
well, we need
I'd
to
rather
take
say
our
I
first
love you
break.
To somebody. All right.
Okay. If you hold that thought. So we're going off for our first break. Everyone, don't go anywhere. Stay with us. We'll be back more with Mind Health Matters and Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers, crappy to happy. Sacred stories of transformational joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles. Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Sit and read in the garden, explore the woodland trails, or try a daily yoga or meditation class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org or call 800-944-1001.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back, and you're listening to Dr. Bernie Siegel. His show, Mind Health Matters, is heard on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. And we are a network that can be heard in any country, any way. You can listen in the car, you can ask Alexa, you can listen online, get the apps, all of that thanks to technology. And Bernie's show is heard every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time. To get a hold of Bernie or to learn more, you can go to his site. It's BernieSiegelMD.com. Siegel is S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com. And our guest, Jerry Hussey, can be found at SoulSpace, just as it sounds, SoulSpace.ie, I-E for Ireland, SoulSpace.ie. And before we have Bernie come back, I had a question for you, Jerry, and I haven't read the book, but do you feel, well, I believe, and there's a lot of stats out there and conversations of kids actually misunderstanding something as early as 2 years old or even in utero, and so they may form in their minds, they may form a certain belief that may not even be true, and these kids may be loved by their parents, and maybe the parents don't show it emotionally, and so the child continues to grow thinking that he's not good enough, he's not loved, and then that's the journey of the healing work within. Do you feel as though that it goes back as early as 2 years old with a misunderstanding from the child?
Absolutely, I do. And what we know from science, we know that from the age of 0 to 8, a child operates at a very specific brainwave called theta brainwave. And theta brainwave allows us to download information very, very fast. So that's why we can learn language, we can learn social cues, we can learn our identity and our awareness so fast in those first years. So we're literally downloading straight. But what doesn't happen is the analytical thinking brain doesn't kick in. So the danger then is that we're downloading everything and we believe everything. So everything we see and everything we hear, everything that's said, we don't have any filter to sort out what's good, what's wrong. So that's the first thing. So we have to be very careful to what we expose children to, what they listen, the language we use. And secondly, we need to recognize that children, you know, first interact the world almost through energy. So if a parent is stressed or distracted, they feel that, they experience that, but they haven't got the analytical brain to think mommy or daddy's distracted because there's a lot going on at work. They're, you know, they don't know why you're distracted, but all they know and all they feel is that when you're with them, you're not present. That, you know, so kids look for things like social cues. So they look for your eye contact there. They're highly tuned at being able to decipher just by looking at someone's face. Is this person present? Are they engaged? Do I make them happy? Are they safe to be around? Now, if we're around our children and we're stressed, we're anxious, we're distracted, the child can sense all of that. It knows, but it doesn't know why, so it begins to blame itself. I'm not good enough. I don't make daddy or mammy happy. I'm not enough to sustain their attention. So I think that's the first part. You know, between 0 and 8, a child is on theta brainwaves, it's downloading everything. And secondly, we need to know also then in utero is so important because that's when the DNA, that's when the blueprint is being set. And of course, the body is set up to be able to live and thrive within the universe. But the only universe it knows at that time is the mum. So if the mum is very stressed or very anxious, then everything in the baby is being set up, so its sympathetic nervous system is being switched on. It's cortisol. So it's being set up to be able to exist in a high-stress environment. So it's almost like we need to really look at not just the nutritional or the chemical situation of the mum in that 9 months, but we need to look at the psychological, emotional. So we know emotions change your chemistry, but the child and its nervous system and all its blueprint is being switched on, not because of the outside world, but because of the world of the mum. And that's not to put pressure on mum, that's not to bring guilt or blame on mums, but we can't deny that so much of a baby's thinking, feeling mechanism, so much of their chemical reality is being put in place. And that's my belief, that those first 9 months, there's so much being downloaded, there's so much being put in place that, you know, if a parent is stressed or anxious or, you know, I think it can show up in a child.
Mm. Yes.
I agree.
I've got to tell you a story.
A normal childhood without any kind of abuse or any of the other pieces that can come in to create trauma.
Let me add, for my children, our children, my wife had 5 kids, which included twins. And there were 3 boys. I wanted a daughter. I have to tell you, my wife's sense of humor. She learned she was going to have twins. She said, if it's 2 more boys, I'm not coming home from the hospital. But one of them was a girl. But the boy, one day, he came up to me. We got 5 kids. You know, the house is a very active place. And he said to me, "You don't love me as much as my brother."
Oh.
I gave him so much credit for a 7-year-old coming up and saying, "You don't love me," you know, because he could have interpreted everything in that way and not said anything, because he was the sweetest kid of all, gentle, sweet. So he's in the last bedroom at the end of the hall. You know, now he could have been saying, "They don't love me. Look where they put me at the end of the hall.
I know.
And look at my brother. He's got a room off the kitchen." Yeah, because your brother's driving us crazy, so we got to watch him every minute. But
of course.
I said to him, "What do you mean we don't love you?" "I don't get 20% of your time. You got 5 children, I should get 20%. I said, "Your brother is driving us crazy. He gets 40%. But I gave him so much credit for coming up and speaking up. And one other time, he was my therapist. He came to me, he said, "My leg hurts. I need an x-ray." I said, "Take a hot bath. It'll feel better." "No, I need an x-ray." And I've learned as a physician that intuitive wisdom. When a 7-year-old says, "I need an x-ray," go get an x-ray. And he had a bone tumor.
Well,
the likelihood it's a malignant tumor. He'll lose his leg. He'll probably lose his life. And I'm feeling guilty because I said, "Take a hot bath." And anyway, to make a long story short, we were lucky. The biopsy showed it was a rare benign tumor, so it was removed and, you know, he's okay. But again, I thought, you know, before we knew it was benign, he comes home from the hospital before all the pathology reports are done, and I'm depressed. I figured, you know, he's going to be dead in a year. Mm-hmm. And the kids are running around, you know, making noise, playing games, and I'm saying, "Go sit in your room, you know, and stop making all that noise." And Keith is his name. He came to me again. He said, "Dad, what is it, Keith? You're handling this poorly." Can you imagine a little pipsqueak of a kid saying that to his father? "You're handling this poorly." I said, "What do you mean?" "You want us depressed in our room. We want to go out in the yard and play." Boy, what a therapist he is. I said to everybody, "Everybody out, go and have a good time." Playing in the yard. But it shows you just what you were saying, what parents can do, you know, and ruin the kid's life out of fear and everything else.
Yeah. I think sometimes we underestimate their ability to read a situation and their ability to read our energy. And what we do as parents then is we try to bottle things up because we try to be strong. We try to, you know, not admit vulnerability. We try to solve everything for our children. The problem with that is all the while they know, but just by looking by it, they know from our energy that something is wrong. They know. And then the danger with that is they start to create stories in their own head, and then they start to maybe make it even worse than it is. And I think communication, I think we have to really underestimate. No matter how young a child is, they have an amazing ability to sense, to be intuitive, to pick up. And we need to be open about our emotions. We don't need to be perfect parents. We don't need to be invulnerable. But what we do need is open, honest means of communication. And what we don't need to do is to show them that the way we deal with unwanted emotions is to bottle them up and suppress them. But if they don't see us engaging in those open, honest conversations where we deal with different emotions in a healthy way, then they don't know what to do. So when they start to feel these emotions, they just say, well, Mammy and Daddy, they just bottle this up, so I'll do the same. So I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as parents to try to be the problem solvers, the strong ones. But there's a flip side of that then that means that we're teaching our kids that there are certain emotions that you bottle up, you don't speak about, and you just pretend it's not happening and you get on with it. But the child at all times, they know exactly what's happening. They know by looking at us. They know by sitting beside us. They sense and feel us. And they know when we're happy. They know when we're sad. They know when we're anxious. And if we're not communicating with them as to why, we lose them.
We need to introduce a sense of humor into their childhood, too. I mean, one of the best things that happened one day that I didn't intend was the five kids were fighting in the kitchen. And the twins have a hearing impairment due to exposure to German measles that my wife went through when she was pregnant. And I went into the kitchen and I yelled, "You may choose peace or you may choose conflict." And our daughter with the hearing impairment said, "I'll have pizza." And everybody busted out laughing. So all I have to do if they're fighting is say, "You want pizza?" And they'd all laugh and stop fighting. And, you know, to be able to have that kind of code word and that symbol, it helped everybody. We also, one other thing just popped into my head, we also had a lot of pets. And they help everybody be calm and
of course.
Take it easy. And the only one I have to tell you that was funny, one of the boys was into reptiles and he had snakes. Every time the snakes escaped, they went into the girl's room, Carolyn's room. And it's like they knew that she was afraid of snakes. So we'd hear a scream and we'd say, "Oh, Carolyn found a snake." And we'd always go to her room and there it would be. But I find that the animals also sense what the children need. My wife died 4 years ago and I always say that I have two girlfriends now. The cats in the house filled in for my wife. Literally, getting in bed, lying down with me if I'm on the sofa. I mean, it's just incredible. They never did it before. So, that is in us, and to share those feelings and allow them to come to you if you need something.
Yeah. In my book, I talk about that ability for us to sense that we are energetic beings, and the analogy I use is, anybody who's ever walked into a house where there's been a sudden bereavement, the minute you open the door of the house, before you see the family, you can feel it, you can sense it. So sometimes we dismiss this idea that we are energy beings, but people know that when we're around people who are in deep depression or deep bereavement, we can sense it. And I wish that we could get out of our heads a little bit more. Because, you know, we know the brain is an incredible thing, but it's a threat detection system. And get into feeling. Can we feel each other? So we are hugely energy beings. And the energy in which we live, as we know now, plays such a huge role in our chemistry, our biology, in the expression of our genes and cells. And that's what I try to prove in the book, that yes, we are biological, and yes, we are chemical, but we also are electrical. We are energy. And if we don't rebalance, if we don't reset our energy, then the chemical, the biological, will always be out of balance. And
that's why the intuitive.
And this is
healing.
A perfect time. We need to go out to a break. So everyone, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Bernie Siegel and his guest, Jerry Hussey.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, Chaos to Clarity, and Crappy to Happy, you'll love Crying and Laughing Through Mayhem to Miracles, Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
Experience the interweaving of energy medicine, shamanic healing, and more with modern medicine woman Lena Franklin and shaman Jeff Gladstein. Discover how to create a life of overflowing abundance through embodied energetic practices and conscious reprogramming of thought patterns. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for the Heal Energetically for Abundant Living workshop at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, June 5th to the 10th. Learn more at eomega.org.
Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back, and you're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. His guest today is Jerry Hussey. He's from Ireland, and he connected with his soul, I'm going to say, from when he was a young boy and led him to all the glorious things that he's doing and writing this book. So I find it, isn't it fascinating how as we go along in life, once we become conscious of a higher purpose, then we're really going back to everything that we have experienced and seeing either what we learned or where it is that we need to, the root cause of where we need to heal. So over to you, Bernie.
All right. Yeah, you made me think of something very important. That I have lots of magazines in the house when I was a controversial figure. And that's what it says on the cover of the magazine. Dr. Love, an interview with the controversial physician, you know, on self-healing. Now, today, they wouldn't put that title on the book about the controversy. It's accepted. You know, times have changed. And we have to keep our minds open. But the trouble with medicine is we're focused on disease. I mean, this may interest you, Jerry, because I do a lot of work with drawings. You say to medical students, draw yourself working as a doctor. The first time I did that, only one student in the whole class drew a patient in the picture. Everybody else was sitting behind a desk with a diploma on the wall, you know. Look at me, I'm a doctor. No patients at all. It blew my mind. But that's something I do now to people. I say, here's a box of crayons, draw a picture. And then the truth comes out, the intuitive part. Because that's another thing that's coming in now. Intuitives, diagnosing illnesses, meeting people, looking at them and saying what's wrong with them. And to make a long story short again, when I went to this workshop where I met my patient who said I need to know how to live, when I came back on Monday to the office, my partner, who was an intuitive guy, looked at me and said, you're gone. I said, what are you talking about? I'm gone. He said, you're not the same person you were on Friday. You're going to leave surgery. And I did a few years later to go out and, you know, preach and do workshops and help people. But it's amazing that he said that. You're gone.
Yeah.
You're not the same
you mentioned the word. You mentioned the word disease, and, you know, for me growing up, disease was something of the physical. But when we even look at the word disease, it means lack of ease. And that's not coincidental. So what I started to ask myself is people who live with a lack of ease in the mind or a lack of ease in the soul, does that eventually become a physical disease? Yeah. Now, we know when we live in a fight or flight, when we live in a sympathetic dominant state, our sympathetic nervous system is switched on, we're flooded in the hormones and chemicals of stress, and we start to, you know, lifestyle then becomes the thing that's downregulating our immune system. Our lifestyle begins to be the thing that's beginning to make us sick. And a number of years ago when I started to challenge, you know, why people were getting sick, because, you know, sometimes in Ireland we have this idea of a pill for every ill, so as soon as someone gets ill, it must be something chemical, so we give them a chemical pill and that's going to make them better, and we change nothing in their lifestyle. But we know now that so many of the illnesses that fail, particularly Irish hospitals, but I'm sure it's the same world over, are actually lifestyle-based disease. We know in Ireland 20,000 people a year die of heart disease and different heart issues, and 80% of those deaths are scientifically, medically deemed preventable. So I think this idea that disease just happens. Now, I still think there are some diseases. I still think there's a percentage of stuff that even with a healthy lifestyle, we can be unlucky. But I think we need to re-examine this whole idea of what disease is. And I think that by the time a disease becomes physical, the physical is a symptom of something psychological or emotional. It's the symptom of an imbalance that has been happening for years. And what I've been trying to tell people is that we don't go on from optimal health to sickness. You know, we know.
Well, let me interrupt you. So now you'll know how to help them quickly. When people come in and say, I have an illness, I have a problem, what word would you use to describe it? Whatever word they come up with, I say, how does that word fit your life? What in your life fits that word? A woman being admitted to the hospital with severe migraine headaches said to me, well, it's pressure.
Wow.
15 minutes later, the nurse came over to me and said, it's her marriage. That's her pressure. She's going home to straighten it out. The headache's gone.
Yeah.
What word? Failure. Well, what's failure in your life? Oh, I have cancer. My body's failed. That's not my question. What was failure in your life? My parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child. Oh, and a few years ago when I was running all over the planet giving lectures, I got up one morning and was so dizzy, the vertigo, I thought, whoa, I got to lie down. Then I said to myself, hey, dumbbell, do what you do with patients. Why are you having this symptom? What is it like? Well, the world is spinning around. Right. You got to stop doing all the things you're doing. And so I slowed down and the vertigo went away. But it is so impressive to me how people come up with the word and look at me and say, thank you, and then walk away.
I know. Or, you know. It's so important. And even the way that different emotions impact different organs, we know, for instance, people who suffer grief will often come up with lung issues. So we know grief and the lungs are connected. Yeah. We know anger in the kidneys. And I think one of the biggest failings, particularly in Ireland, and this is where, you know, I've been trying to do this work for 20 years, I think we have this idea that every physical change is caused by something physical. And that's denying the whole energy side of the human being. That's denying that sometimes our frequency, sometimes our lifestyle creates the physical change. Stress, unresolved traumas, and that's why I think in the book, he- health and wellness isn't always about taking on something new. I think sometimes it's about letting go of unresolved traumas or that belief system that was formed by the time we're eight. Unless we go in and really reset, rebalance that, our frequency, our energy is constantly going to keep that physical side out of whack.
Yeah, Monday morning we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses, you know, because of how people feel about their job, their life, their Monday, and to readjust and, as you're saying, reset it, let me say one other word. If you get well when you're not supposed to, doctors will say, oh, you had a spontaneous remission. And I always thought, that's a pretty stupid comment. Why don't you say to the patient, how come you didn't die when you were supposed to? I began to meet people I thought were dead at my lectures. And I'd say, hey, how come you didn't come back? Why didn't you this? Why didn't that? But they always had a story to tell me about why they didn't die.
Yeah.
It could be I left my troubles to God, to I quit being a lawyer and started playing my violin. You know, it was lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
And it was obvious. And so I stuck
the guy that
word on.
Bought a house on the beach.
And I think that, Western medicine, chemical medicine, as I call it, I think it knows all of this, because it will talk about, you know, spontaneous recovery. It will talk about placebo effect. And people think placebo effect is some type of trickery. Placebo effect is proof that your belief system and your belief system alone is a huge contribution to your healing. So the our medical world completely understands the power of the mind and the power of beliefs and placebo, but it doesn't utilize it. It dismisses it. It doesn't really understand it. It uses the term.
In Solzhenitsyn's book, Cancer Ward, he has the term self-induced healing. One of the men says, I found his book, because they're all in the hospital, library. It says here there are cases of self-induced healing. And the symbol fluttering out of the book was a rainbow-colored butterfly. And I knew that Solzhenitsyn knows exactly what we're talking about. The rainbow is your life in order. The butterfly is a symbol of transformation. So transform your life, create order and harmony, boom, the disease goes away. And it's self-induced. It's not a spontaneous, you know, lucky event. It's something you induce.
And, you know, there's a little expression that I use all the time, and it's in the book. And, you know, I say, no amount of green juice or green salad will alkalize a toxic self-image. If we don't, if we don't look at ourselves with kindness and love and compassion, if we are rejecting part of ourselves, then we can physically do all the right stuff. We can eat all the right food, but our toxic self-image, the things we say to ourselves, the things we say about ourselves, the beliefs we hold about ourselves, that's what's turning us toxic. Or there's another way I say it. I say, you know, compassion is the ultimate superfood. And love is the ultimate superfood.
You have to love yourself. Did I tell you the story about the lady who laid down naked in front of a mirror? Did I tell that already?
Yeah, and body image, you did. And it's such an important thing.
Yeah, because I take episodes myself now, not naked in front of the mirror, but just like when I get into bed at night, I'll fill my heart with love and say, all right, now pump it out to all the other organs, you know, and let my whole body know I love it. And you can feel the difference in your body when you do that.
Absolutely.
Of course. And the first time I had a real example of that was at 15, for the second time, I was thinking about committing suicide. I was anxious. I was in a heightened state of anxiety. My heart was racing. My body was almost out of control. And before I was thinking about ending my life, the one thing that came into my head was I started thinking of my mom. And I had always an incredible relationship with my mom, a really loving relationship with my mom. And the more, for the moments I started thinking about that, I started thinking about, well, my mother's an intelligent woman. Why does she love me? And I started to think about things, well, there must be things about me that I could love. And I started to think about them. And in those moments, for those brief moments that I was thinking about love and feeling loved, I suddenly noticed that my heart rate wasn't racing so much. I could feel that physically, it was like for those moments when I focused on love and allowed myself to feel loved, it was like the anxiety was disappearing. And I say to people, it was almost like if anyone has ever gone ice skating, if you're a bad ice skater like I am, just when you think you've cracked it and you say, oh, I've cracked it, that's when you're going to fall. So at 15, mm-hmm. I realized that all of these sensations, these physical symptoms, the moment I focused on love and felt love, they stopped.
And you felt
And for
that,
me, that yeah. became a real awakening. Now, I didn't have the science at the time, and I didn't know why this was happening, but that was a real experience of the power of love. And that if we don't have love, if we reject ourselves, if we have this toxic self-image, if we reject ourselves, then we're rejecting everything in our being. So that's, that was for me at 15. Even though I couldn't understand it, I didn't know the science behind it, I knew that somehow there was something more powerful than anxiety. There was something more powerful than fear. And it was love. And in those moments that I allowed myself to feel love, all of these physical symptoms just instantly dissipated.
Beautiful. Well, that's a perfect way to end the show, Jerry and Bernie. That's beautiful, Jerry, and I'm so glad that you felt that higher power, inner power, all of it. You felt why we're here, you know, to return to that.
So everybody has
all right, well, thank you so much. It's been an honor, Jerry, and thank you, Dr. Bernie, for your wisdom
as always.
And everyone, get the book, Awaken Your Power Within, Let Go of Fear, Discover Your Infinite Potential, Become Your True Self. Get the book by Jerry Hussey. And till we meet again, bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.